we can see that illuminated sign that marks the end of the journey.
This vaccine will help us get past this pandemic once and for all.
We need people to have faith that this vaccine is safe and that they should take it. The thing that's going to stop us from seeing the end of this pandemic are people going, oh, I'm not so sure.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Roger Hearing.
And good afternoon, I'm Caroline Hepke. So, we're back to shopping, drinking outside in pubs. Boris Johnson is urging caution, though, as further restrictions are eased in England today. So pubs, shops, hair salons, gyms, nail salons, all welcoming customers back. But the Prime Minister says that it will be a huge relief for those forced to close for so long. He says, though, the nation should still behave responsibly.
That said, there is a warning that only 2 in 5 pubs will today be able to reopen outdoors. The British Beer and Pub Association says only 40% of venues have space to serve outside. Its chief executive, Emma McClarkin, spoke to us earlier on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
Those that will be opening their doors today will be doing so at a loss. We're waiting until the 21st of June as the really first day that we will begin a recovery and have the opportunity to get beyond break even.
Well, for more on this, let's bring in Bloomberg's UK government reporter, Emily Ashton. Emily, thanks for being with us. What are the changes exactly that are happening today?
Well, all shops can now reopen. So before you only had supermarkets and various other shops, but every shop can now reopen if they want to. And hairdressers, which is essential for many people. And hospitality can open outdoors. So, you know, you saw lots of newspaper headlines about beer gardens. But I think when people got up this morning over large parts of the UK, they'll see snow falling and maybe don't want to sit in a beer garden later. But that is possible. And you can sit outdoors in a restaurant if you'd like to. And then also things like outdoor attractions like zoos and theme parks and gyms are also open as well. So a big change for people who've suffered months of restrictions here.
Yeah, it's been a very long, grim, difficult winter. So, yeah, some normal activities returning. It comes also as the vaccine programme continues really apace. The priority groups 1 to 9 are due to all be hit today.
Yeah, we're going to see the figures later to see if that's definitely been hit. But priority groups 1 to 9 are basically all people over 50. And the government set that target to vaccinate all people over 50 plus people with certain health conditions by mid-April. So if we see that happening, you know, they've reached their target. You know, that's really good news for the government. You know, things are going well with the vaccination program. I think in April we have seen a bit of a supply reduction. They're focusing much more on those second doses, making sure people get those second doses within 12 weeks. But I think by the end of April you're going to see more people in the over 40s category being brought in for their vaccinations, which you can see, you know, is really making a huge difference across the country.
Now, Emily, as the earlier failures clearly had a political cost, there is an element that this, I guess, has a political benefit for Boris Johnson. The latest poll over the weekend in The Observer showed overall approval for the government's handling of the pandemic was now positive for the first time since May last year. The vaccination, the reopening, it's good news for Boris Johnson, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's been quite a turn of fortunes for Boris Johnson. I mean, obviously things haven't, it's not the end of the pandemic yet. We've got to see how things work out with variants and cases could rise again later in the year and are likely to over autumn, so we'll see. But this poll shows that actual overall approval for the government's handling of the pandemic is now positive for the first time since May last year. And, you know, if you think about where the UK has been, one of the highest death tolls in the world, the highest in Europe, some serious kind of during some mistakes last year, that led to such a rise in hospitalizations at various points in the year. So suddenly the vaccination program seems to be Boris Johnson's redemption. But we do, as I say, need to see where we get to later in the year with variants. We're not at the end of this yet.
No, absolutely. And also, I was reading the figures. It's not just the vaccine rollout. It's also the testing. That was a huge problem, the test and trace system. But we're doing hundreds of thousands, if not, I think, 1 million tests per day, something like that, a huge figure. But Emily, also, you know, you mentioned variants. One of the issues around travel, we don't know whether travel will be allowed, whether summer holidays to Europe will go ahead, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's early May. I think they're going to report again on where we're going to be on travel. They have said travel is possible from May the 17th, but it's the traffic light system of countries. We don't know which countries are on the red, amber, green list yet. And if, say, some countries in Europe, their cases are high, in, for example, France, if that's on the red list, that would mean a long quarantine in a hotel on people's return. That, you know, would cause real issues for people wanting a holiday on the continent that is kind of affordable. If the only places you can go to are the Maldives and the Caribbean, that's going to cause quite an issue for the airline industry, but also for people that just want a bit of a break from the UK. So we'll have to wait till early May for that and see where cases are in those countries.
And is there still a bit of a push from the back benches on Boris Johnson to try and get him to go further and faster? I mean, we've seen that in the past. Is that still there?
Yeah, I think it will always be there. And I think there is also nervousness about this idea of vaccine passports. I think a lot of people, like Steve Baker, for example, thorn in the side of Boris Johnson, Tory backbencher, kind of see the government moving the goalposts constantly. That's what they say. They say, oh, you know, you've now vaccinated the most vulnerable in the country. Therefore, you should be reopening most of the country. Why aren't you doing that? And that will always, but there's always something else to do. You know, the country is not in a kind of perfect position yet. And this idea of vaccine passports kind of taking away people's rights, that doesn't sit well with the Conservative Party. So I'm sure these debates will rumble on and on.
Emily, thanks so much for your time. Emily Ashton is Bloomberg's UK government reporter.
Well, it's not just, of course, in London, right across England. The toll of the latest lockdown on local economies has been heavy, and the enthusiasm to reopen is huge. Let's look at what's happening in Liverpool. Joining us now, very pleased to say, is Paul Sherpo, who's chief executive of the Liverpool Chamber of Commerce. Paul, welcome and thanks for being with us. How is the reopening today looking in Liverpool?
Well, so good. It's a blessed relief for a lot of our businesses that they're finally able to open their doors. It's been a long time since many were able to open. Our city centre has felt like a ghost town for quite some time. And today's another step forward, I think, for getting back to some sense of normality. But as I say, it's just one step at this point in time. But so far, it's going reasonably well.
Okay, that's good. The thing is, it's been a very tough winter. How many Liverpool businesses have actually gone under in the lockdown? Is it possible to see which sectors have been worst hit now?
It's still difficult to make that absolute determination for the time being, but there's no doubt there's been a huge amount of pressure put on a lot of our leisure and hospitality and visitor economy businesses in particular. As many of your listeners will be aware, Liverpool has really reinvented itself over the last two decades as a tremendous place to visit for leisure purposes, and of course that's such an impacted sector across the country that we've probably been disproportionately impacted by that. 50% of our business rates are generated by businesses in those sectors, the vast majority of which have had to close over the course of the last 3 months. So it's been massively challenging for all concerned. But there's light at the end of the tunnel, I think. What we need to see now is the progress around the roadmap continuing, making sure that the city and the city centre is an attractive place to visit. It's a safe place to visit. Businesses are taking the responsibilities to be COVID safe very, very seriously. And in time, the success of that particular approach will be felt, I'm sure.
And I suppose, I mean, part of that is going to be an acknowledgement that things have changed, inevitably. The high street's changed, offices have changed. Have you got new businesses with new ideas launching as well as just bringing back the old ones?
Yeah, we're certainly seeing some shifts around sort of our local economy. There's been some positive developments. The announcement about Liverpool was obtained freeport status last month in the budget was an example of that. We are seeing a groundswell of entrepreneurial activity as people start up their own businesses, their own consultancies and whatnot. And you're quite right that the changes to high street retail were well known prior to the onset of COVID. I think COVID has just exacerbated some of the pre-existing challenges that already existed. So there's actually no doubt about it. But for Liverpool's business community, it's clearly a time of considerable change. There's a considerable, there's huge factors in terms of how city centres will operate. We feel that we're in a reasonably good position. Actually, despite all the challenges that I said earlier, we feel like we're in a pretty decent position. There's a strong economic recovery plan that's in place that is going to be enacted. And there's some real areas of specialism developing, health and life sciences being probably at the apex of that sort of economic recovery, and some of the developments up on our knowledge quarters. But it's not all doom and gloom, and the changes that will take place, I think Liverpool is in a position to capitalise upon them.
Just really briefly, do Liverpudlians, consumers and businesses, have a lot of unspent money, do you think, that could help with a revival?
I think it's difficult to say, in all honesty. I think I think there's certainly pent-up demand for consumers to go out and spend money. Obviously, there's a large degree of uncertainty for a lot of the population. There's still a considerable number of people who are on furlough. There will still be challenges over the next 6 months in terms of job security, the rebuilding of capacity within individual businesses to be able to trade above break-even and to generate surplus, which can then be invested. However, I think there are certain opportunities that are available for businesses to capitalise upon. And I think that we will see a programme of investment from businesses as they seek to capitalise on some of the government schemes that exist at the moment with some of the opportunities there.
Now let's have a look at what else is making news in the world of politics. Well, we're going to be talking about David Cameron, because he has broken his silence over the controversy over the former Prime Minister's lobbying for the company Greensill Capital. The former Prime Minister is defending his actions, but he says there are important lessons to be learned. As an advisor to the company, Cameron lobbied the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, encouraging officials to give Greensill access to pandemic funds.
Meanwhile, turning to Brexit, MPs and several business figures are setting up an independent commission to scrutinise and improve the UK's international trade deals. It comes after the government ordered the closure of a House of Commons Select Committee in January. It had a remit to examine Britain's relations with the EU. Now, this new Trade and Business Commission, which formally launches this week, will involve MPs from all political parties, including Hilary Benn, who is the former chair of that Brexit committee. So interesting that they're going to look at trade deals.
But at the same time, the clash between the UK and the EU over vaccine supplies has hardened voter attitudes towards Europe. A new Bloomberg poll shows support for Brexit has actually grown since the historic 2016 referendum, and almost two-thirds of adults believe that being outside the EU helped the UK's vaccination programme to succeed. 67% of respondents in the online poll said the EU had behaved in a hostile way towards Britain, with just 13% saying the EU had acted like an ally and a friend in the dispute over vaccines.
And finally, leading politicians will meet in the UK's parliaments and assemblies later today to pay tribute to the Duke of Edinburgh. Prince Philip died on Friday at the age of 99. He had been a national and international figure for more than 70 years. Prince Charles said his father was a much loved and appreciated figure.
And the most remarkable, devoted service to the Queen, to my family, and to the country, and also to the whole of the Commonwealth. As you can imagine, my family and I miss my father enormously.
The UK is now in a period of mourning ahead of Saturday's funeral at Windsor Castle. Well, it is a strange week of contrast then, isn't it, between the sadness and mourning over the Duke of Edinburgh and also the reopening, this sort of spring reawakening of England. Shoppers in London have braved pretty unusually icy temperatures today because non-essential shops are reopening. How much those consumers spend is going to be key to the strength of the hoped-for British revival. But what of Europe's busiest shopping area, the West End? Topshop on Oxford Street is shut, Debenhams is gone, John Lewis has announced some of its stores won't reopen. Joining us now is Jace Till, who's chief executive of the new West End Company. Great to have you on the programme, Jace. Let's start with the good news first, shall we? How much will people spend, in your view, on this reopening day?
Well, I have to say, on a very sunny Oxford Street where I am, there's customers that have been out since 6 o'clock this morning. So, look, we're expecting about 40% of footfall back this week. So nowhere near the levels, obviously, of 2019 pre-COVID, but certainly there's some pent-up demand. If there's any indication this morning, And let's hope it's a steady build in the weeks and months ahead as the West End starts its almighty recovery.
Well, Jace, I mean, where you are standing there now, if you were to move into one of the shops, I'm not suggesting you do, but if you did, what would you face in the way of requirements of, well, obviously mask wearing, but I guess distance perhaps, hand washing? I mean, what are the kind of safety measures that are in place?
Well, I think the retailers have got used to the measures they need to put in place now, both their customers and also their colleagues working in retail. And you're going to see the usual stuff, the sanitization, the signage, the queuing. And I have to say, customers are being very well behaved this morning. I think we're used to it now, aren't we, given a year of lockdowns and reopening. But I think what's changed talking to customers, we've done some research, and also businesses here in the West End, is with the vaccination, it feels structurally there's a difference now, and there's more optimism and sort of more confidence to come out as well. And we're seeing that today. And as I say, let's hope that continues not just here in the West End, but up and down the country as the city centres and towns start coming back to life again.
Yeah, absolutely. Half of adults have been vaccinated, so no doubt many people feel a bit more confident. Do you think that with this swift rollout of vaccines that the UK retailing should reopen perhaps a bit more swiftly or at least on time?
Well, I think the government has set out a pretty robust roadmap. I think it's really important we stick to this timetable. I've got to remember there's some very, very hammered balance sheets right across retail, hospitality, you know, hoteliers. So we do need to see the May and the June deadline sort of met and that reopening. But I think we do need to be slightly cautious. We're sort of racing against the vaccination rollout. And people are a little bit hesitant. We've got to start to rebuild that confidence. But I think, you know, that all the signs are there. There is pent-up demand. There's a lot of household disposable income that people are sitting on. And we hope, obviously, they're going to come and spend some time and money in the West End this year as we start to rebuild.
Now, if you look up and down Oxford Street from where you are, I mean, can you see some boarded up shops? I mean, is it possible to get a sense of quite what is left in perhaps the nation's premier high street and what's gone?
Yeah, look, there are boarded up shops, and I think this has happened around the country, but, you know, there's about 20 to 30% of the West End that is either closed or being redeveloped. I have to say, though, there is a lot of appetite from different types of businesses. Looking at the Topshop site, the Debenham site, other sites around the West End, there's about £4 billion being invested by development and rebuilding. So I think for the medium term, we're confident, you know, Crossrail will open, customers will continue to come to this bit of London. But I think it's the immediate period is to watch out, really, to make sure that, you know, these businesses are here, can survive this year, they've got enough support. That's why we've called on the government to look again at Sunday trading. But I think the West End is going to change, and there's going to be different types of businesses opening here. But I think the investment is there, and I think that's why it has a strong future ahead of it.
That's interesting. What about the people, you know, the workers coming back? Retail's actually the largest private sector employer in the UK. About 70,000 retail jobs have gone in the last year, according to the BRC, so the trade organisation. What is hiring looking like now? How quickly do you think that's going to be built up?
You're right. I mean, retail, hospitality, you know, hundreds of thousands of jobs. And I think, you know, that's a real challenge for the industry. And I think pre-COVID already in retail, we were looking at the productivity and what's required in retail and hospitality sector moving forward. And there's different skills. So there's definitely sort of productivity gap that needs to be filled there. Saying that, you know, talking to a number of hoteliers last week and retailers, they think in the second half of this year, that's actually going to be a pull on the labour market, and we're going to have actually a struggle to get the number of staff we need back into the West End because the demands are going to be back, and we've lost a lot of people moving back to Europe and others, you know, pre-COVID. So there is a concern in the short run, actually. We may not have enough staff, actually, for the requirement coming back. So it's a sector, both hospitality and retail, flex us quite quickly, but a good indicator, obviously, that there's demand that they're looking to build back later this year.
But part of the demand for shopping, specifically, I guess, in Oxford Street, but also in the whole area that you represent, has been, particularly in the summer, of course, international travellers, tourists coming to London. Mm. It's a big, big part of it. And that is simply not possible. So how can you deal with that?
Look, I mean, to the West End pre-COVID, we had about £10 billion spent every year here, and £5 billion, half of that was international. So huge customer base that we're missing from the Middle East, Far East, and Europe. And I think all of our forecasts, we're not going to see any meaningful international customers return until probably next year and 23. So I think we're very reliant on the domestic customer. There'll be a lot of marketing, as you can imagine, to attract those customers into the centre of London this year. But I think a lot of the businesses here are taking a long-term view. They know that it will come back. We'll get back to 10 billion turnover. So they're vested in the longer-term future. But I think for us, it's really important we keep the government to the roadmap of opening international travel safely, think about those air bridges again, particularly as we get into our Christmas period and into next year. 22 is a big, big year for Britain. So we want to make sure that we've got enough of that demand side coming back for international tourists again to really help the West End over the next year or two.
Yeah, and I think that also plays into, you know, the nighttime economy, of which there is a big one in the West End, theatres and all sorts of things that, that those tourists come to seek out too. I mean, when it comes to shopping, you've got late opening hours for some of the shops in Oxford Street. So how much more do you want to see done about the kind of nighttime economy and about late opening?
What's really interesting, actually, in the last 12 months is this sort of alfresco early evening culture that's really emerged. And I guess it had to with COVID, obviously, with all the outdoor dining. But there's definitely a shift where customers want to shop a bit later, which is why we've actually written to the Secretary of State last week to look at Sunday trading for the West End and Knightsbridge and see if we can extend that. Because we know that customers want to shop later, and at the moment we have to close at 6 o'clock on a Sunday. So I think there are measures like that. And then you think about the night tube and the culture. So I think, yeah, the way the West End is heading, it's going to be more an evening economy to support the daytime, and that's got to be right for the area. And I think we're going to see different types of businesses open up that support that evening economy as well. And that's part of sort of the great repurposing that's happening in central London right now.
Well, maybe that is the most central point of all. That actually, I have to say, even in good times in the recent past, Oxford Street hasn't always looked at its best. Maybe if you had a more welcoming, hospitable coffee shop type atmosphere, and acknowledge that actually people can do a lot of their actual shopping online still, maybe that's the way forward.
Totally. And you think about the great cities in the Far East and that sort of culture of going in the evening and walking down and promenading and all that stuff. You know, I think that has to be right for the Oxford Street area. And I think we're going to start seeing that pretty rapidly being built in into the future as well. And Westminster Council, they're investing £150 million in that venture to really create an environment where customers want to spend time and not just endure Oxford Street, but actually enjoy it again.
One last brief one. You have not mentioned the Oxford Street Mound. Is that what's happening with that? The kind of at the end of the street?
Yeah, this is an initiative of the City Council to have an attraction this summer, which, look, I think it's great. We've got some attractions popping up. I think there was a bit of a rumour there was £150 million being spent on that, which wasn't the case. But I think, you know, there is going to be an attraction there. They're looking at some other attractions through this year, and I think we welcome that. We've got to give customers reasons to come back to the West End.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.